This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, good morning everyone. Bruchim Abayim to the Koilel Agra de Pirka here in Kew Garden Hills, New York, or B'chol Mekoymos that you find yourself in. We're going to draw up the Mar Mekoymos. Are you able to see that? Let's see here.
Not yet.
Okay. So here we go. Could you see that?
Yeah, that's it. Can you make it a little larger?
Yeah. Okay, so good morning, everyone. Parshas Lech Lecha, Bruchim Abayim. Before we begin, just want to remind everyone, Baruch Hashem, the new Sefer is out, Elokad Demeir Aneni. And many very important topics, especially to the current situation that we find ourselves in. It has a lot of divrei chizuk, and you could order it. Rabbi Moskowitz was kind enough to post the link on the Zoom. If anybody wants to order the Sefer, you could go to Torah Anytime. Go to Speakers, you go to Gladstein, there's a bio, and there's a link there that you could order the Sefer. And hope everybody enjoys it. I want to thank everyone who participated in helping with the publication of the Sefer. Bezus Hashem, we're working on something on Sefer Bereishis. If anybody would like to be a patron of the Sefer, please contact us. Thank you so much. Okay, so Parshas...
Look in the chat area where you'll find a direct link for ordering the Sefer.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, so good morning, everyone. Parshas Lech Lecha. This is a subject that always gives me chizuk personally, and I hope this will give us encouragement and inspiration. The Gemara in Sukkah tells us a story. The Gemara says, "Ahisa basa da asoy lekamei de Rav Nachman." There was an old woman who came before Rav Nachman. Amra le reish galusa. Amra le, she said to him, so an old woman comes before Rav Nachman and she had a complaint. She says, Reish Galusa, the exilark, who is a very powerful figure, V'kulu Rabbanon debei Reish Galusa, and all the rabbis of the house of the exilark, B'suka Gezula Havayasu, they're all sitting in a stolen sukkah. So Rav Nachman says, Nus, what's the problem? So they're sitting in a stolen sukkah. Savcha v'layashkachba. She cried out and nobody paid attention to her. Rav Nachman didn't pay attention. Rav Nachman said, so what's the problem that it's a stolen sukkah? So she said, it's my sukkah. The problem is they stole it from me. I want my sukkah back. Give me my sukkah back. But I don't have any recourse to take back my sukkah from the Reish Galusa and all the rabbis of the Reish Galusa. They're too powerful for me. I'm a poor woman. Why can't somebody help me? So Rav Nachman did not pay attention to her. Amra le, she said to him, I can't believe you, Rav Nachman. Why are you ignoring me? You're just dismissing me? Don't you know who I am? Itza, a woman, the havele la'avua, that her father had, tlas mea utamni sri avde. My father had 318 slaves. Tzavcha kamaychu, she's crying before you, v'lo yashka chisuba, you're not paying attention to her. Don't you know who I am? My father had 318 slaves. And how did Rav Nachman respond? Amar lahu, Rav Nachman said to them, Rav Nachman piusahi, she's a kvetch. Ve'ein lo ela d'mei eitzim b'vad, you don't have to give back the sukkah, she only gets the value of the wood. But Mar Rabbi said, the question here is, what in the world is this seeming nonsense that this woman is spewing, that do you know who I am? My father had 318 slaves. What relevance is it how many slaves her father had? What, she's reading off her father's bank account? If she wants to let Rav Nachman know how rich and powerful her father was, so she should just say, you know, my father's very wealthy, my father's very powerful. My father is he's a mafioso. But what is this nonsense? My father had 318 slaves. You know, what relevance is the number of slaves that Rav Nachman, that this woman's father had? And what is the significance of 318? So, we go now to a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says on Daf Tzadi Zayinam and Aleph, Tan Rabbanan ki yadin Hashem amoy, when God will judge His people, ki yira ki ozlas yad ve'efes atzur ve'ozav. God will see that all hand has been gone away and there is no recourse and everything is forsaken. So this pasuk is a description of when Mashiach will come. And the Gemara brings an opinion, you know, when Mashiach will come, davar achar, ad sheyisya'ashu min ha-geula. Mashiach will come when people give hope from redemption. Shenemar, v'yefes, otzur v'ozov, kibiyachal ein soymech v'ozol Yisrael. When there seems to be no help, when there seems to be no assistance, when the powers that be are not sympathetic to the Jewish cause, when we have no outside assistance, that's when Mashiach will come, when everybody has given up hope. Mashiach will only come when everyone has given up hope. Now, why is that? We know we express our belief in the coming of Mashiach. We have a principle of faith, Ani Ma'amin Be'amunah Shalema Be'Vias HaMashiach. And yet the Gemara says that Mashiach will only come when everyone gives up hope. You know, there's an interesting account. In 1967, there was a lot of messianic fervor, especially we had access to Mekomos HaKadoshim that we hadn't had in 2,000 years. And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky made a very bold statement. He said, He is assured Mashiach is not coming. So they asked Rav Yaakov, you know, Rav Yaakov, maybe you're not a supporter of Zionism, but how do you know Mashiach for sure is not coming? Maybe we don't know for sure Mashiach is coming, but how do you know for sure he's not coming? So Rav Yaakov pointed to this Gemara. This Gemara says Mashiach will come when everybody gives up hope. But when everybody thinks he is coming, that's the telltale sign that he's not coming. So if there's messianic fervor, then you know for sure that's not the opportune time. But the question is, why is this? Why is this the case? Why will Mashiach only come when everybody gives up hope, when all hope seems lost? So let's come back to the 318 slaves. Maybe many of you have already picked up on some of the clues, because in this week's Parsha, in Parshas Lech Lecha, we do encounter someone who had 318 attendants. When in the war between the four kings and the five kings, so the four kings defeated the five kings, and they captured Lot. Vayishma Avram ki nishma achiv ayark eschanichav yulidei beisai. Shemayna sarush lo ishmeyos vayirdoif adon. Avram heard that his brother was captured, and he armed his attendants, those who were born in his house, 318 men, and they pursued him until Dan. Who exactly are these 318 attendants? So right off the bat, what this woman was clearly saying, Rabbi Isai, is, do you know who I am? My father had 318 slaves. What she was saying is, I'm not an ordinary person. I am a descendant of Abraham, who had 318 slaves. This was her way of saying, don't mess with me. I have 318 servants. But the question is, why is she referring to Avraham as the one who had 318 servants? Would anybody say about Avraham, oh, you know who Avraham is? There are many accolades we could shower upon Avraham. We could say he's Rosh Hamaminim. We could say he's the greatest Baal Chesed. We could say he's the greatest Makarev Rechoikim. But I don't think in any source where it talks about the greatness of Avraham, the description given is that he has 318 slaves. Of what relevance is it that he has 318 slaves? So Rashi says that in fact Avraham did not have 318 slaves. In fact, he didn't have any slaves at all. He only had one slave. And that slave is Eliezer. The pasuk says, Shmoina Asar, Rabbi Seinu Amru, Eliezer Levadai Hoya. Our rabbis say, it was only Eliezer. V'hu minyan gematria shel shemai. The numerical value Eliezer is 318. So that's all it means to say, that Avram heard that his brother was captured and he armed his men, those who were born in his house. not 318, but rather he armed Eliezer. So according to this, why was the woman saying, "Do you know who I am? My father had 318 slaves." In fact, Avraham did not have 318 slaves. In fact, Rabbeinu Bechaye asks that how could Chazal darshan that Avraham only had Eliezer and not 318? Well, ein mikro yotzi midei pshutai. If the pasuk meant to say that Avraham armed Eliezer, then it should say vayorak es Eliezer. If it clearly the pasuk is not saying that it's that he armed Eliezer. Clearly, the pasuk is saying that he armed 318 slaves, because if it was referring to Eliezer, it could have said it straight and saved a lot of real estate. I mean, the word Eliezer is a lot shorter than Shemayna Asar or Shloish Meis. So, in Mikro Yotze Midei Pshutai, why would the Pasuk hide the identity of Eliezer? So, there's a very beautiful Rabbeinu Bechaye here. He says, V'yesh Lishol Ki Lefi HaMedrash Hazeh Shemayna Asar Shloish Meis Eino Kepshutai Elachida Eliezer Levadoi Ve'en Lanu Lehoitzi HaMikro Midei Pshutai. Because the Pasuk is talking about 318. So Rabbeinu Bechaye says, no, there is no question. Avraham must have had 318 slaves, otherwise the Pasuk would not have said it. So the Pasuk is saying that Avraham Avinu armored and readied 318 slaves. And what happened was, after Avraham readied them, prepared them, and armored them, he gave them the Musar Shmuz that is described in the Torah about how the general has to, rile up his soldiers. Well, according to the Torah, before Jewish soldiers go to battle, the general has to weed out any people who might have certain faults. So first he says, is there anybody who got married and didn't consummate it? So 10% of the soldiers go home. Anyone who bought a new house and didn't live in it, another 10% go home. And then the pasuk says that the general says to his soldiers, "Umi ha'ish hayore v'rach ha'levav." Is there anyone here who's scared of battle? So simply it means, is anyone who's not courageous? But the Gemara says it means, is there anybody who has committed a sin? And if you commit a sin, you're no longer worthy to defend the Jewish people because you're endangering yourself. You don't have the requisite zechusim. Now, what avera are we discussing over here that if somebody commits it, they're not eligible to be in the Israeli army, in the Jewish army? So it's a machlokes between the Bavli and the Yishalmi. The Bavli says if somebody speaks between Tfilin Shel Yad and Tfilin Shel Rosh, that is a serious crime. If you have that crime in your repertoire, your life is in danger at a Shas Sakana. And if anybody speaks out between Tefillin Shel Yad and Tefillin Shel Rosh, says the Bavli, they should go home. They cannot fight in a war on behalf of Israel. However, the Yerushalmi says, no, that's not what it's referring to. It's referring to somebody who speaks during davening. Says the Yerushalmi, does it refer to someone who speaks by Chazaras Hashatz? No, obviously not. That person is like a murderer. He can't do anything. He cannot serve in the army for sure. What about somebody who talks by Kaddish? No, absolutely not. That person is like a murderer. Gadol Avoinu Minasai. What about somebody who speaks during Kriyas HaTorah? No, we're not talking about outright flagrant violators of Halacha. You know what we're talking about? We're talking about someone who speaks in literally the most lenient part of davening. What's the most lenient part? Talking between the end of Yishtabach and the beginning of Yotzer Ar. Well, what do you mean? That's actually the one interval that you're allowed to speak for a Dvar Mitzvah. For instance, let's say you have 9 people in the shul and you want to make a phone call to get a 10th. During Psukah Dezimra, you cannot. During Birchas Kriya Shema, you cannot. During Chazor Sashatz, you cannot. The only time you could say a word, L'Dvar Mitzvah or L'Tzarchei Rabim, is between Yishtabach and Yotzer Ar. That's why in some shuls they say Shir HaMalos Mimamakim then, because that's the only time you can be mafsik during the davening. So if somebody spoke out then, not for a Dvar Mitzvah, it is such a serious crime that they're no longer eligible to serve on behalf of the Jewish people. So you understand that the halachic criteria for serving in the Jewish army is slightly different than the criteria of the Israeli government today. But that's an interesting subject in and of itself.
Wasn't it between putting on a shayad and sharosh, they said that if you speak then, you don't get to join the army?
So I said that's the opinion of the Bavli. But the opinion of the Yushalmi is if you speak between Yotzer and... between Yishtabach and Yotzer. So now, no problem. So now, Avram Avinu is giving this Musar Shmuz. Is there anyone here who got married? So some of the people run away. Anyone who bought a new house? Some of the people run away. Anyone here said a joke during davening? So the other 80% of the people ran away. They're only left with one guy who is has a clean slate, and that is Eliezer. So the truth is, Avram started out with 318 soldiers, but then it whittled down to only Eliezer. But Marv Rabbeisai, what exactly is this woman getting at? That do you know who you're speaking with? How dear nobody takes up my cause and helps me get back my stolen sukkah. But what do you mean? I come from Eliezer. I come from Avraham. You know who Avraham is? He is a man who had 318 slaves, meaning he had one slave, Eliezer. That's random. Why is she invoking the fact that Avraham Avinu had a slave, Eliezer? What does that have to do with anything? Now, by the way, just a side note. The Gemara says that she said they're sitting in a stolen sukkah. Is a sukkah which is stolen a kosher sukkah? So the Gemara darshins, Chaga sukkah is ta'aselecha, that it has to belong to you, a stolen sukkah, you cannot be yod to the mitzvah of sukkah with it. Tosfos asks, why do I need a drasha chagas sukkos tasalacha? But we know it's a mitzvah haba b'aveira. And if it's a mitzvah haba b'aveira, I don't need a pasuk to darshan chagas sukkos tasalacha. You can't be yotze the mitzvah of sukkah anyway because it's a mitzvah haba b'aveira. So some rishonim want to answer that mitzvah haba b'aveira is only a psol d'rabbanan. And I need the drasha of chagas sukkos tasalacha to teach me that you're not even Yotze Midaraisa. There's a famous Minchas Chinuch who wants to say that even if you say Mitzvah Haba B'Aveira is a Doraisa, I believe Rabbi Notam holds that way, Mitzvah Haba B'Aveira only says that you don't fulfill the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah. But the sukkah itself would be kosher in that maybe someone else could sit in it. And Chag HaSukkos Ta'aselecha says the Cheftza of the mitzvah is also disqualified as well. But be it as it may, back to the ranch, why is this woman invoking the fact that Avram Avinu had 318 slaves? We encounter another interesting thing. So Avram Avinu is running after the four kings to try to rescue Lot. Vayicholek aleihem laila. God divided the night. Hu va'avadav, him and his servants. Vayakim, and he smote them. Vayirdefeim, and he pursued them. Ad choiva. Until Choyva Asher Mismala Damasak. So the Pasuk literally means Vayicholek Aleihem Laila, that the Ribbono Shel divided the night, that God divided the night. Why does it say that God divided the night? What is the significance that God divided? What does it mean that He divided the night, that Avram divided the night? It should say He split up His people against the kings during the night. Not Vayecholek Aleihem Laila. Vayecholek Aleihem Hu Va'avodav Laila. Why Vayecholek Aleihem Laila? It almost sounds like Avraham Avinu divided the night. So Rashi says, Keloimar Achar Shechoshcho Le'nimna Me'lirdafem. After it turned night, he did not refrain. He did not know. He continued to run after them. But Rashi brings a medrash agada shenechlak halayla. The night was divided. Uvechetzia harishay nasaloynes. During the first half of the night, a miracle happened. Vechetzia hasheni, and during the second half of the night, nishmar, it was preserved, ubalay, and it was saved. Lechatzis layla shel Mitzrayim. Marv Rabbeisai, Rashi is saying a very interesting nekuda over here. That night that Avram Avinu ran chased after the four kings to rescue Lot, That night was divided into two. In the first half of the night, Avraham saved Lot. The second half of the night was saved for a different miracle, and that is to redeem the Jewish people from Egypt. I always wondered what, you know, God was going bargain hunting over here. The Ribbono Shel Olam was looking for a good deal, and he said, you know, if I'm going to bring miracles, I might as well do two for one. So I'll have Avraham save Lot in the first half, and I'll take the Jews out of Mitzrayim in the second half. This way, you know, I'll save, it's half price. Instead of taking the Jews out of Egypt on a totally separate night, well, buy one, get one free. I'll take the Jews out of Egypt on a night anyway that's designated for miracles. Why did God have to do this? What's the purpose of it? Why did He need to do this? Why couldn't Hashem make a miracle for Klal Yisrael to take them out of Mitzrayim any other night? Marv Raboisai, there is a challenge in life and a hurdle in life that is perhaps the greatest weapon of the Yetzer Hara and the most powerful arsenal that the Yetzer Hara has. And it is this tool that is the most effective way that the Yetzer Hara has to prevent us from accomplishing in Avodas Hashem. It is the most effective tool the Yetzer Hara has in dampening our resolve to serve Hashem, to learn Torah, to act properly. And this is a method that is described in Parsha Shoftim, where the pasuk says, "Kiseitze la melchama leivecha," when you go out to war against your enemy, "Veraisa," and you see sus, horse, "Varechev," and chariots, "Amrav," a great multitude, "Mimcha," greater than you, "Loisira mehem," do not be afraid. "Ki Hashem aleikecha imach," God is with you, "Hamalcha me'eretz Mitzrayim," who took you out of Egypt. So the simple pshat here is, you're going to go to war against your enemy, you're going to see that they're very well equipped and very well armed, and you're going to become overwhelmed because their infantry and their cavalry is much greater than what you have. Don't be afraid, because you've been outnumbered before. God took you out of Egypt and saved you from Paro and his cohorts. However, the Archaim HaKadosh says that the war that is being described in the Parsha Shoftim not only refers to a physical battle, but it refers to the war against the Yetzer Hara. Very often, the Yetzer Hara comes to a person and he says, "Reb Yid, you? Okay, you heard some words of inspiration. You want to become a Talmud Chacham? You want to learn more? You? You wasted 70% of your life already. You already wasted your youth. You already had many, many years you could have accomplished. You're going to start now? Yeah, no, that's for maybe younger people who, they still have a shot. They could still make something of themselves. You're going to daven with Kavana? You already spent half your life saying word after word, Shemoneh Esrei after Shemoneh Esrei, with no Kavana at all. You're going to serve Hashem and do mitzvahs properly after what you did last year, or after what you did when you were younger, or after what you looked at yesterday, or after what you were watching? How could you accomplish anything in Ruchnias? And then the Yetzer Hara paints a very bleak picture. He paints a very terrible picture. He shows you all the disgusting angels that you created through your many, many sins, monsters, despicable spiritual entities that you created. Every time you wasted time, every time you said tefillah improperly, every time you hurt someone's feelings, every time you looked at something indecent, the Yetzer is showing you disgusting monsters of angels of destruction. And the Yetzer Hara says, "Kiseitze la milchama," when you go out to war, aloivech, against your enemy, your enemy is the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is going to show you horses, cavalry, a whole infantry, a whole army of terrible angels that you created. Amrav, a great multitude, and you know who created it, says the Yetzer Hara? Mimcha, you created it. You brought it upon yourself. You're a despicable Russia, the Yetzer Hara says. You're dirty, you're sullied. God is not interested in you. You don't have any hope in Ruchnias. That is the central argument of the Yetzer Hara. you're not going to be great in spirituality because you're so dirty and you have such a retinue of despicable angels that you've created and amassed in your lifetime. You don't have a shot. But you know what the pasuk says? Lo yisira mehem. Don't be afraid of the Yetzihara. Ki Hashem alekecha imach, God is with you. Hamalcha me'eretz Mitzrayim. He took you out of Egypt. When you were in Egypt, you think you were a great tzaddik. You think you were a big oved elekim. You were on the 49th level of tumah. You were naked and bare of any mitzvos at all. You are a memtesh shari tumah. You were steeped in avodah zarah. And yet God, in a very short amount of time, raised you up, elevated you, elevated you, elevated you, until you're at the pinnacle of the world where you were walking through the split Yamsuf, pointing at the Ribbono Shel Olam, Zeh Keli V'Anveyu, and in 49 days later, you stood at Sinai, and God elevated you to Mamlechas Kainim V'Goy Kadosh, and in a short time, you went from being a Mem Teshari Tuma to the point where you would actually live forever like Adam HaRishon, if not for the Chedo Ega. There is a four-letter word. Now, I don't like to say four-letter words. I'm a rabbi, you know, it's not proper. But Torah hi v'lomayda anu tzarech. There's a very dirty word. And this is the most dangerous word in all of Judaism. And that four-letter word is yiyosh, hopelessness. There's a sefer, Eitzos v'Hadrachos, by Rabbi Yaakov Greenwald, who was a student of the Stipler and the Manchester Rosh Hashiva. He was nifter somewhat recently. I believe he lived in Muncie. And he wrote two volumes, Eitzos v'Hadrachos. And it's a book about probably the most relevant issue for Jewish people today, from people today. And that is, we live in a generation where the emotional constitution of people is weaker than it ever was. Where people's nerves, as they say, nervous system and mental state is so fragile and so tenuous, where literally so many people suffer from challenges, emotional challenges, anxieties, despondencies, OCD, disorders, personality disorders. It's because the emotional makeup of man today is more fragile and tenuous and really fragile than it ever was. And of all of the various emotional distresses that people suffer, yiyush, despondency, and hopelessness is the chief among them. There is no feeling in the human persona which is more debilitating and more crushing and more painful and more challenging and a greater hurdle and squelches a person's ability, drive, and literally sucks the life out of a person. Excuse the expression. But there is nothing that sucks the life out of a person more than yiyush. Once a person feels hopelessness, whether hopelessness in health, in family situation, in physical situation, emotional situation, yiyush, hopelessness with relationships, with a spouse, with children, with parents, with brothers, with sisters, a person literally is de-energized and they cannot function. And there is no more depressing and demoralizing feeling that than yiyush. And I'll tell you the truth. I've given this share before. And I don't know, it could be this is the most frequent share I give. And I think it's because it's one of the most important that we need to hear and remind ourselves all the time. Spiritually, many people are miyuash. Many people think, okay, I'm addicted to certain averos and I can never pull out. Especially young people, like the audience we have for the shir over here. Especially very young people, teenagers, young adults, especially with technology today, where they become addicted to certain taivos and certain indecent pursuits, and they think God hates them, they'll never be able to stop what they're doing, they'll never pull out, they'll never free themselves. And once a person is miyuash, then the person says, why should I bother davening? Why should I bother going to minyan? Why should I bother learning? Why should I bother anything? My life is hopeless. And this is literally the main arsenal of the Yetzer Hara. Because more than the Yetzer Hara wants to make us sin, he wants to kill us. This is a very important principle Rav Itzhak Petterberg gives. That don't think the Yetzer Hara just wants to make a person sin. He literally wants to kill a person. He wants to make a person depressed, sad, despondent, and by doing so, he will debilitate a person. And therefore, the most debilitating phenomenon and human feeling is yiyush. But Marv Rabbis,
yeah. Is there a significance of the fact that the gematria of yesh?
1 second, don't spoil the.
I look at gematria.
Okay, so the Gemara tells us in Masechta Brachos that there was a very difficult situation. And that was a situation of Chizkiyah HaMelech. So one day Chizkiyah gets a knock on the door. And the knock on the door is by none other than Yeshayah HaNavi. And Yeshayah HaNavi says, I have bad news and I have worse news. The bad news is you're a dead man. The worst news is... So Chizkiyah says, with bad news like that, I'm not interested in the worst news. So Chizkiyah said, Yeshayah said, I didn't ask you whether you're interested or not. The bad news is you're dead. The worst news is you lost your share in the world to come. So Chizkiyah says, I'm a pretty good guy. What did I do wrong? You know, Chizkiyah revolutionized Torah study in Klal Yisrael. He, from Dan until Beersheba, there was not a child who was not Baki in Tumah V'Tahara. And the way he did it was he put a sword at the entrance of every Beis HaMedrash. He said, whoever doesn't learn Torah will be severed, will be pierced by the sword. By the way, to all you Rabbanim out there, this is a very effective way to get people to learn, you know. But all kidding aside, the Netziv asks in his Hakdama, learning Torah is very important, but how could he literally threaten people with their lives? Basically, he said, come to Shir, or I'm going to chop your head off. You know, learning Torah is very important, but it's not Yeharek V'Al Yavar. And the Netziv basically says, Chizkiyah needed to lead Klal Yisrael in battle. And Klal Yisrael's wars were dependent on the level of Torah study in Klal Yisrael, and therefore, part of Milchama was Limud HaTorah, and he was enabled, the same way the king could force people to go to war, he could literally force people to learn Torah so that Klal Yisrael should be protected. Okay, bottom line is, Chizkiyah says, so what did I do wrong? Yeshayah said, you're a good guy, you're a great guy, you make people learn, but you don't want to get married. Chizkiyah said, I had a very good reason. I didn't want to get married because I saw Baruch HaKodesh. I'm going to have wicked children. So famously, Yeshayah said, Bahadei Kafti Rachmano Lamalach, what are you meddling in the affairs of God? You do what you have to do, and God will do what He wants to do. So Chizkiyah says, okay, you big talker. If I should get married, I'll marry your daughter. So, you know, between my zchus and your zchus, good things will happen. So Yeshayah gives him his daughter, and Chizkiyah gets married. But Yeshayah says, look, you're still a dead man. There's a gzera. There's nothing we could do over here. You're a dead man. So Chizkiyah responds to Yeshayah. He says, get lost. He says, Ben Amos, Kalei Nevuas Chavetzei, cease your prophecy and leave. Kach mikoblani beis avi abba. I have a tradition from my grandfather. Even when there is a sharp sword that is placed on somebody's neck, never refrain from mercy. It doesn't matter how desperate the situation is. It doesn't matter if the Navi says you're a dead man. It doesn't matter if there's a sword against your neck. I have a tradition from my grandfather that even when the sword is on the neck, never refrain from mercy. So the Gemara says, Chizkiyah HaNavi turned to the wall and he prayed, and sure enough, he was able to lengthen his life. Marv Rabbeisai, what did Chizkiyah HaMelech mean that I have a tradition from my grandfather, even when the sword is against my neck? Don't refrain from mercy. Who was his grandfather? Presumably, he means David HaMelech. Many times in David's life, he was cornered. He was in a desperate situation. And the Almighty saved him. So Chizkiah learned from David that no matter how desperate the situation seems, never refrain from hoping and yearning for God's mercy, like the pasuk says, "Hein yiktalani loyayachel." However, we want to present today the approach of Reb Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin. I believe he lived from 1823 to 1900. And if there's any piece that captures the essence of the message of Reb Tzadok HaKohen, if there's any piece which is most representative of the teachings of Reb Tzadok HaKohen, I believe it's this. We know that the name Eliezer was not only the name of the servant of Abraham, but was also the name of the son of Moshe Rabbeinu. And why was he called Eliezer? The pasuk says, "V'shem ho'echad Eliezer, ki Elokei avi be'ezri, the God of my father was at my help, v'yatzileini mi'charev paroi, and he saved me from Paroi's sword." The meaning of Eliezer is to be saved even in a time of desperate situation. Marv Raboisai, Reb Tzadok HaKohen writes, "Ein li Yehudi l'hisyayesh mishum davar." A Jew can never give up hope from any matter, whether it's a physical illness or situation. Chazal say, even when the sword is on the neck, don't refrain from God's mercy. Whether in a spiritual situation, even if someone is immersed in a certain sin, even if it's a sin, the Zayar says there are certain sins you can't do tshuva for. For example, the Zayar says, "Haytzah zar al vatala," you cannot do tshuva for. Even that sin, there's still hope you could do tshuva for. The Eglei Tal writes in his Hakdamah, if somebody learns Torah b'ion, you could do tshuva. Even if someone sees that he's habitual in a certain sin, even someone he sees he's lo yitzlach in a certain area, so a relationship is not going their way, whether it's marriage, whether it's chinuch, whether it's shaduchim, a Jew can never, ever give up hope. The definition of a yid is there's no such thing as yish. Where do we see this? We see this in this week's parsha. God created something called the Jewish people. You ever hear of those people? The Jewish people. Klal Yisrael. Where do we come from? Abraham. What is the likelihood that the Jewish people could come from Avraham Avinu? Avraham Avinu was pretty old, by the way, and he had no children. He's already 99 years old. I bet you don't know anyone who's 99 who had children. Not only that, Avraham was impotent. He was toichin ve'inoy poilet. He wasn't just old, he did not have the physical ability. How about Sarah Imenu? Sarah Imenu was not an akara. Yeah, she was an akara, the pasuk. She was worse than an akara. The Gemara Nivama says she was an islandess. She had no uterus. When Avraham and Sarah came to Boinei Olam in a time, they told them, "Sorry, there's nothing we could do for you. There's no procedure, there's nothing, you're not capable of having a child." Question, why would God bring Klal Yisrael from Avraham and Sarah? God doesn't make miracles for nothing. He should have had, Avraham was 23 and a half, he just came out of the freezer. Sarah Imenu just came back, Echves from BJJ. She's 18 and a half. And they had children. And this way, there doesn't have to be any miracles over here. Because God doesn't like to change nature. Why would God bring about Klal Yisrael in this super miraculous way? And the answer is God created the fabric of Klal Yisrael that we exist above and beyond Yish. That just when you think all hope is lost, there is hope. God wanted to be boina this ummah after Yish Lagamri, where there is no one in the whole world who would believe that there could be a Jewish people, to create that the foundation of the Jewish people is we are built above and beyond Yish. Likewise, the future salvation of the Jewish people. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Ein ben David ba ad shel yisyashu min ha-geula. David HaMelech will not come until we are completely give up hope from redemption. That's why the Navi says, and the Navi in the Shiva de Nechemta, that's consoling the Jewish people, that there will be a binyan one day, there will be a rebuilding of Yishalayim one day. The Pasuk says, Habitu al Avraham avichem yal Sarah techaylalchem. What does Avraham and Sarah have to do with binyan Yerushalayim? If you think that the state of the Jewish people is hopeless, if you think Mashiach can never come, there can never be redemption, God says, just when you think all hope is lost, look to Avraham and Sarah. Their matzav seem to be much more hopeless. And if God was able to bring all of Klal Yisrael from Avraham and Sarah, God could redeem us as well. Marv Raboisai Abraham, Roish HaUma, he understood that the fabric and the makeup of the Jewish people is above and beyond Yish. Avram saw it from his own life. And therefore, when Lot is captured, was there ever a more desperate situation than when Lot was captured? Lot was captured by the four kings. The four kings beat the five kings. Avram Avinu is going to somehow rescue Lot from the four kings. It's impossible! It's desperate! It's not within the realm of possibility. And yet Avraham says, let's go! Let's get him! That, you know, even the king of Sodom from the five kings, he told Avraham, fine, you take the money. You take the rechush. He was miyayish from it. Avram Avinu realized that this was an impossible situation and it's a desperate situation. And if it would have been a regular person, you know what they would have done? You know what word they would have said? A very dirty word, a four-letter word. They would have said, Yiyush. They would have given up hope. Yiyush is Gematria 317. However, Avram Avinu realized that if you have the Ribbono Shel Olam on your side, that if God is with you, that if you're mamin, Be'elekei Avi Be'ezri, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is with you, Eliezer! Eliezer's Gematria 318. Now, the way Reb Tzadok HaKohen says it is, Eliezer is 318 and Yiyush is 318 Im HaKoylel. But I once heard from Avram Shor, maybe a little bit differently, Yiyush is Gematria 317, Eliezer is 318 because Eliezer could be Moitzi from Yiyush. How does a person rise above despondency? How does a person rise above hopelessness, helplessness? How does a person rise above what seems to be a debilitating, impossible situation? Physical, spiritual, emotional, relationship, marriage, shiduchim, chinuch. How do you rise above it? There's one way. Yiyush is 317. Eliezer is 318. If a person feels with every fabric of their being, ki Elokei avi be'ezri. What was a more desperate situation than Moshe Rabbeinu in the palace of Paroi, where Paroi swings that sword at the neck of Moshe Rabbeinu, but what happened? His neck turned to stone, and God saved him from the sword of Paroi. Avram realized that if it's Elokei Avi Be'ezri, then Yiyush is not a factor. Then you could rise above Yiyush. You could elevate yourself above Yiyush. Says Reb Tzadok HaKohen, an incredible pshat in the Gemara in Sukkah. The woman comes to the Reish Galusa, to Rav Nachman, and she says, Rav Nachman, they stole my sukkah. So Rav Nachman says, so what? They're kind of your sukkah. She says, what? How are they kind of my sukkah? Rav Nachman says, don't you know the halacha? Okay, it's a stolen sukkah. Yeah, but now it's in their rishos, so they're shinoi rishos. And you gave up hope from ever getting it back. So, Yiyush and Shinoi Rishos is a Kenyan. So since you gave up hope from that sukkah, you're never, ever, ever going to get it back. Halachically, they own it. Why do I have to give it back to you? And the woman turns to Rav Nachman and she said, seriously? You think I gave up hope? Do you know who I am? Do you know who my father was? My father was Avraham. You know what Avraham had? 318 slaves, meaning Avraham believed the Emunah Shlema in the power of Eliezer, and the power that if God is with you, you could rise above any situation, even against the four kings. And Avraham did not give up hope, even in a hopeless situation. Says the woman, I'm from Abraham. If you come from Abraham, there's no such thing as Yish. I was never Miyayish on my sukkah. Give me back my sukkah. I'm from Avraham, 318. I could rise above Yish, Eliezer. Yish is 317, Eliezer is 318. Mavravoisai. In a way, this is the most fundamental tenet of Judaism. I remember my grandfather was interviewed after the war, and the interviewer said, Rabbi, you witnessed the massacre of European Jewry. You saw the murder of your brothers and sisters. You saw the skulls, the corpses, the blood flowing. Was there ever a time that you lost faith in your God? Was there ever a time you gave up hope from the prophecies of your Torah? And my grandfather responded, did I ever give up hope? Sure, I gave up hope. I lost faith in mankind. The German people who the night before they were in their opera houses or listening to symphony and the next day they shed all human conscience. So I lost faith in mankind. The American people, Roosevelt bombed around Auschwitz. He could have bombed the death camps. He put his head in the sand. He made believe he didn't know what was happening. So I lost faith in mankind. But I never, ever lost faith in my God. I never, ever lost faith in the promises of the Torah. A Jew never loses faith. I'll tell you, I remember about 5 years ago. No, what am I saying? Somewhere between 8 and 10 years ago, I got an email from an older single girl. And it was Parshas Vayetze. And we were saying over about Naphtali, the word Naphtali that Leah gave Naphtali, she contorted in tefillah. She prayed and she prayed and she prayed and she prayed and she prayed until finally God gave her a child. And the limud from here is, when it comes to spirituality or anything in life, never give up hope. You should pray, you should pray, you should pray, you should pray. And this older single girl wanted to know, well, what if you're in a situation where it's, you know, it's sort of, it's not really possible anymore. So to pray is just painful. And to keep on praying is just putting yourself in a situation where you're setting yourself up for disappointment. Okay, that was the Shaila, and what I answered. And a few months ago, I think maybe a month ago, my wife showed me in one of the Jewish magazines that this person wrote an article about their new baby. I said, Ribbono d'Alma Kula, I remember the message that I got about 8-9 years ago. But there is no situation in life which is beyond hope. This is the fundamental tenet of Judaism. We know that if there's a reason for a mitzvah, which is more thematic to more mitzvahs in the Torah than any other, it's the concept that mitzvahs are zecher liyitzias Mitzrayim. There's so many mitzvahs that we do zecher liyitzias Mitzrayim. Shabbos, we make kiddush, tefillin, mezuzah, Sukkah. Every door we walk out of, Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. Every morning we tie it onto our arms. We sit in the Sukkah. We make Kiddush. We observe the Shabbos. So many of the mitzvahs we say Kriya Shema. So many of the mitzvahs we do are Zecher Litzias Mitzrayim. Genikshoin. How many times do I need to remember Litzias Mitzrayim? Every single doorway, I have to tie leather straps until I limit the circulation of the blood flow in my arms. I'm not going to forget. Why is it so important to remember Yitzias Mitzrayim, Yitzias Mitzrayim, Yitzias Mitzrayim? And the answer is, says Reb Tzadok HaKohen in his Pri Tzadok on Pesach, because the fundamental tenet in Judaism is a Jew cannot be miyayesh, not physically, not spiritually, not emotionally, of anything in life. Never be miyayesh. You always have to hope that Hashem is going to bail you out. Was there ever a greater yiyush? Was there ever a more desperate situation than the Jewish people in Egypt? We're on the 49th level of Tumah. We were naked and bare of mitzvahs. And the Ribbono Shel Olam yanked us out. He schlepped us out. So the reason, the objective of always remembering Mitzrayim, 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 is so that we never give up hope, and it's always on the forefront of our mind that the Ribbono Shel Olam could bail us out of any situation. I like to say that is perhaps the reason why these two miracles were, so to speak, two sides of the same coin. The rescue of Lot from Sodom, and the rescue of Lot from the five kings, and Yetzias Mitzrayim, these were sort of the quintessential desperate situation, the quintessential moments of Yiyush in the history of Klal Yisrael. And in both scenarios, the Ribbono Shel Olam demonstrated that if you believe firmly, Ki Elokei Avi Be'ezri, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is with us, He could yank us out of every single situation. Marv Rabbeisai, is there any more vivid description of this concept than the life of Eliezer himself? Now, listen to this story. Avraham Avinu turns to Eliezer. He said, Eliezer, I need a shidduch for my kid. Eliezer was thinking, you know, what's wrong with my daughter? I have a daughter. I'm your faithful servant. What's wrong with my daughter? So Avraham Avinu basically said, your daughter? He says, my kid is Baruch. Your kid is Aror. And we don't mix. The blessed and the cursed, we don't mix. I always believe in Shaduchim. You have to be transparent. So when somebody calls you, you know, what are Chazal saying? Don't tell them, no, my son is not available right now. He's in the freezer. He just said yes 10 seconds ago to somebody else. Oh, you should have called me 20 seconds ago. No, if you're not interested in the shidduch, you should say, my family is blessed. Your family is cursed. And we don't mingle, right? Is that a very encouraging thought? Imagine if somebody would hear from the shadchan. The Shadchan, you know, you're expecting to hear some kind of lame excuse why they're not interested. Imagine if the Shadchan said that the boy's father said that his family is a blessed family. And you are despicable. You are disgusting people. You are miserable, cursed people. And therefore, he doesn't think it's a good shidduch. What would you say? You'd say, I don't think this is a good shidduch either, right? But that's what Avraham told Eliezer. Now everybody knows there's a phenomenon today. You have a guy, he's chvest, he's 35 years old, he's 40 years old, he's 45 years old, and you watch him during shul. And the guy is sitting there, and he's reading a book about Harry Potter in the Beis HaKnesses. You say, Reb Yid, you know, this is davening time. He says, yeah, but I can't daven. Why? Because when I was in second grade, my Rebbe said that I'm not a Baal Kishrein. So for the rest of his life, this kid has a chip on his shoulder. And the kid, you know, blames his second grade Rebbe. You never saw such a thing? Well, it's unfortunately people blame their Rabbeim or their parents or their life circumstance. They can't do anything. So imagine if you were Eliezer and you heard from Avraham Avinu, your Rebbe, your mentor, your guide in life. Your guide in life said to you point blank, my entire Talmud, you're an horror, you're disgusting, you're cursed, you're despicable. How would you come to Shir the next day? Most people would have thrown in the towel. Most people would have given up hope. I don't think most people would have been able to overcome that. And yet, in the end of Chaye Sara, Amar Rab Yosi Bar Rab Doisa, Kenan Hu Eliezer. Eliezer came from Kenan. Val Yadesha Sheres Oisei Tzadik Be'emunah, but because he served his righteous master faithfully, Yatsa Miklal Oror Leklal Baruch, he extricated himself when Avraham said, Vayomer Boy Beruch Hashem. I mean, imagine, how exactly did Eliezer do that? If a person is Oror because they come from Canaan, that's like, imagine somebody, he's a mamzer. So he could be a good guy, but he's illegitimate. So that's what Eliezer was. Eliezer was an Eved. He was Oror. And yet Eliezer continued to plug away, and he continued to be persistent, and he continued to be a faithful Talmud of Avraham, and he was Damesek Doilu Masmitar Sashar Rabbi Lachirim, and he actually extricated himself from Baruch, from Oror, and he became Baruch. Ad Kedei Kach, that the Arizal teaches us, that do you know who the Gilgal of Eliezer was? Kalev ben Yefuneh. Was there ever a more desperate spiritual status than Eliezer, who is Rebbe? His mentor called him Oror, and he changed his reality. And he became Baruch. Not only did he become Baruch, he became Kalev ben Yefuneh. Mavra Boisai. Rav Pinchas Friedman suggests that when Chizkiyah HaMelech tells Yeshaya, I have a tradition from my grandfather David, that even when the sword is at the neck, Al Yimna Atzmai Min Arachamim, this doesn't just refer to the life of David and the hardships of David, but we know, where was David? What is his point of origin? He originated in light, and the daughters of light. David came from Moav. In fact, when the pasuk says that the Malachim told Lot, "Take shtei b'noisacha hanimtzais, take your two daughters that are found." What are these two daughters that are found? They were found in Sodom. Chazal say that Rus haMoavia nama haAmonis. They are shtei b'noisacha hanimtzais. Where were they found? They were found in Sodom. In fact, the pasuk says in Tehillim, "Matzasi David Avdi, I found my servant David." Say Chazal, where was David found? David was in Sodom. We know David was a descendant of Lot. In that case, if David was able to trace himself all the way back to Lot, then David was in a very desperate situation a number of times. First, David HaMelech was captured by the five kings. That's impossible. That's desperate. That's hopeless. The four kings beat the five kings. How would Lot ever be rescued by the four kings? In fact, the Zohar HaKadosh says that when Lot was captured, Bechlal, the Zohar wants to know, why did Avraham attach himself to Lot? Only because he saw Baruch HaKodesh, that David was going to emerge from light. So David was, so to speak, lost in Sodom. He was in a very desperate situation. He was lost in Sodom, and he was lost by being captured by the four kings. But David recognized from his life, from his experiences in Sodom, being captured by the four kings, that there is nothing in this world that is beyond the help of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the Ribbono Shel Olam bailed him out from the four kings, and the Ribbono Shel Olam bailed him out from Sodom. And therefore, David HaMelech was the one who said, Gam ki eilech begeit salmaves, even if I walk in the shadow of death, lo ira ra, I fear no evil, ki ata imadi, when you're with me, ki alaykei avi b'ezri, then I'm able to rise above Yiyosh. Yiyosh is 3:17, Eliezer is 3:18. And therefore, David HaMelech offers the following tefillah, Chaneni Hashem ki umlal ani. Be gracious to me, Hashem, because I'm confounded. Rafaeni Hashem ki nivlo atzamai. V'navshi nivlo atzamai. V'yata Hashem admosai. God, save me from this very hopeless situation. Shuva Hashem chaltza nafshi. Return, God. Release my soul. The Rashi Tevois of Shuva Hashem chaltza. Shin Yud Ches 3:18. That was a reference to the Bechina of Eliezer 3:18 Kileke Avi Be'ezri. There's a Sefer Sheva Yipal Tzadik. The Tzadik falls seven times. And he quotes the history of one of the great Sephardic giants, Rabbi Sion Abba Shaul, a great guy and best friends of Rabbi Avadia Yosef. He chazered everything he learned 40 to 60 times. But when he was younger, he was a shovav. He was, you know, a menace. In fact, he was thrown out of Yeshiva Parat Yosef. His parents had to beg for him to come back. So he says over the following emotional phenomenon. He says, very often in life, you say to somebody, a bachar, why are you not learning? So he says, I gave up hope, I'm a yuash. It's a cop-out. It's a cop-out. It's an excuse. Really, they're lazy. But it's very hard not to be lazy. It's much easier just to throw in the towel. Once you throw in the towel, then it's taka hopeless. It's much easier, instead of listening to the shir and working on the shir and listening to the rabbeim and working on what the rabbeim teach, it's much easier to say, okay, throw in the towel, give up hope. So the truth is, it's not that they're not successful and therefore they threw in the towel. It's they threw in the towel as an excuse because it's very hard for them to try to be successful. So instead of a person not being successful and therefore they give up hope, more often than not, they give up hope and that's the reason why they're not successful. And then this Sefer quotes a teaching of Ben Sion Abba Shaul that I heard from my grandfather many times. This really comes from the Rav Nachman of Breslov. Yiyush is shaloi midas. Yiyush comes from a lack of das, a lack of intelligence, a lack of understanding. That's where yiyush emanates from. It's without understanding, without knowledge, without perception. Yiyush is shaloi midas. Very often a person says, oh, I have no cheshek to learn, and therefore they don't want to learn. You know what? It's like somebody who has no appetite, and because they have no appetite, they became very weak. So what do they have to do? Very hard for them to eat because they don't have an appetite. They're only going to get an appetite if they get strength back. And what do they have to do? They have to force themselves to eat a little bit until they develop their strength. And then the appetite will come. It's the same thing with learning. Person doesn't have a cheshek for learning. Person doesn't have a cheshek for learning because they don't have the spiritual energy needed to develop that cheshek. So what does a person have to do? They have to learn without cheshek. Very often, how often in life are we in a situation where we say, I can't daven today, I can't learn today, it's already hopeless for me, I'm already beyond, maybe my children will accomplish something, maybe my grandchildren, maybe I'll come back in another Gilgal, but after everything I've done in my life, I'm not going to accomplish anything. Says the Ben Ish Chai, we have to understand that every single day of our life, God gives us a different neshama. And past performance has no bearing on future outcome. Says the Ben Ish Chai, Parshas Vayeshev, B'chol Yoim Nase Beriach Hadasha L'chadesh Kanesh Ne'urav. Therefore, a person is never allowed to feel distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Despised by from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever it was yesterday, today is a new day, a new opportunity. It doesn't matter what we didn't do yesterday, every day is a new possibility, a new opportunity. So the attitude of a Yid is Ki Elokei Avi Ba'ezri. The attitude of a Yid is Zecher Liyitzias Mitzrayim. The attitude of the Yid is, do you know who my father is? My father had 318 slaves. What's the attitude of Yishmael, of Hagar? Hagar, the water depleted from the thermos. And she throws the child, Tachas Achad Hasichem. Says the Shvilei Pinchas number 26. Siach, 318. when a Gentile is in a desperate situation, they go under 318. Tachas hasichem. She threw away the child. She was miyayish. Under 318 is 317. But a Jew is never miyayish. We always rise above yiyush. We always feel and believe and have it integrated within our hearts and minds that ki elokei avi be'ezri, that is the midah of Eliezer. And if we understand and recognize that it's part of our DNA, part of the fabric of Klal Yisrael, is that Ribbono Shel Olam created Klal Yisrael out of a desperate situation. Avraham could not have a child. Sarah could not have a child. And yet we're all here today because God built us on the fabric that there's no such thing as Yiyush. We have Eliezer, we have Elokei Avi Be'ezri, and therefore the woman comes to Rav Nachman and she says, how can you not give me back my sukkah? I was never miyayish. I come from Avram Avinu. And that is how the geula will happen. When you think all hope is lost, just when you think, you know, there's a global pandemic and there's trouble everywhere, and ein yom shein kolosim ruba mechaveroi, but we recognize ki elokei avi be'ezri, and it helps us rise above every challenging situation. Marv Raboisai, have a great day.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.